Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, September 11th, 2020. Section A, Energy, PSP. Infrastructure Investment Needed to Fulfill Permian's Promise by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Although the Permian Basin region that spans both Texas and New Mexico is home to only a small portion of those states' population, it contributes significant portions of gross domestic product of both states. It's important for us to get out there and tell this story, Don Evans, chairman of the Permian Strategic Partnership, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. He said the surge of Permian Basin crude and natural gas production has played a major role in not just the region's economic prosperity, but that of Texas, the U.S., and even global economies. That production growth let those economies grow at their maximum potential and lifted hundreds of thousands of people, if not more, out of poverty. The PSP, a coalition of 20 oil and gas producers that have come together to address community needs from infrastructure to health care and education to housing, just issued a report highlighting the economic opportunities offered by the Permian's natural resources. That report will be discussed in detail in Sunday's edition. In order for the region to realize that potential, Evans said good infrastructure, specifically roads, is needed. I've always said the government's role is to create an environment for the private sector and public companies to do what they do so well, create wealth. Part of that environment is infrastructure so companies can effectively carry out their programs. Without good roads, it's difficult to develop resources in a safe and effective way. PSP, along with other organizations from Motran to the Permian Basin MPO, Midland and Odessa Development Corporations, area chambers of commerce, area mayors and state and federal representatives, have worked to secure additional funding for Permian Basin roads. The Texas Department of Transportation recently affirmed an additional $600 million for Permian Basin roads under its United Transportation Program. In addition, the U.S. Department of Transportation has awarded $25 million under its Better Utilizing Investments to Leverage Development grant program to rebuild the interchange at Interstate 20 and Cotton Flat Road in Midland, to be dispersed by TxDOT. Evans expressed his appreciation that elected officials, from President Trump and Senators John Cornyn and Ted Cruz and Representative Mike Conway at the federal level, to Greg Abbott and state representatives Tom Craddock and Brooks Landgraf at the state level, appreciate the economic contributions of the Permian Basin's energy industry and support the need to invest in the area's infrastructure. He also said he could not be prouder of the leadership shown by the 20 companies who helped form the PSP, an effort he said is unprecedented. They came together to support the citizens, the region, and provide for education, safe roads, health care, affordable housing, Evans said. They're concerned about the citizens of the areas where they operate. It's the friendly nature of the Permian Basin, and they're a big part of that. They want to protect the quality of life here, enhance it, and make it better. Economy. City sales tax collection suffers worst month of 2020 by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. The City of Midland's fiscal year finished with plummeting sales tax receipts. The 2020 fiscal year ended with the worst of for last as the Texas Comptroller's office showed a 36.6% year-over-year drop in sales tax in October. The $3.336 million in October was a 36% drop compared to October 2019 and ended a final fiscal quarter of the year to forget. The city's sales tax collection from July through September dropped 29% compared to fiscal year 2019. That decline was nearly double the 14% drop in the third quarter. The city also reported declines of more than 20% over the last 4 months. Those 4 months accounted for $5.6 million in the year-over-year difference, or around two-thirds of the entire fiscal year deficit. October also marked the ninth straight month that the city reported a sales tax decline. That stretch includes double-digit percentage declines during 7 of the last 8 months. The next fiscal year for the city begins in October. A goal of $49.7 million in sales tax collected has been budgeted for fiscal year 2021. City officials told the Reporter-Telegram this week that they anticipated a $2.5 to $3 million deficit due to COVID-19. They also said they don't anticipate needing to change their sales tax forecast for the upcoming fiscal year. There was bad and good in the city's yearly collection. The $51.8 million collected this fiscal year was an $8.4 million, or 14% drop compared to fiscal year 2019. It also missed the city's projection for fiscal year 2020 by more than $3 million. However, thanks primarily to a first quarter that was 2% increase year over year, the city hauled in its second largest sales tax collection of any fiscal year in the city's history. Sales tax collection is generally thought of as an economic indicator for conditions in the community. Last year, the city brought in the largest sales tax collection in the city's history. Only one other time has the city collected $45 million or more, which was in 2018. A collection represents spending from 2 months earlier. This month's collection is based on spending in July. Transportation. Governor Abbott announces funding for I-20 Cotton Flat Road Interchange. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Governor Greg Abbott and the Texas Department of Transportation announced Thursday that TxDOT has won a federal grant to help transform an intersection on I-20 in Midland to ease congestion and save lives. Through its Better Utilizing Investments to Leverage Development, Build Transportation grants, the U.S. Department of Transportation awarded TxDOT $25 million for the I-20 and Cotton Flat Road interchange near Midland, according to a governor's office. The Permian Strategic Partnership is thrilled USDOT is recognizing the importance of the Permian Basin to our state, nation, and world by awarding build grant funds to this TxDOT project, said Midland's Don Evans, the chairman of the Permian Strategic Partnership, in an email. We are proud to have played an important role in the selection of Permian Basin build projects in 2018, 19, and now in 2020. The Permian Basin is one of the most strategically important oil-producing regions in the world, and it is critical we continue to invest in the region's priority infrastructure projects to fully realize its potential, a sentiment that Abbott also stated in the press release. Improving the infrastructure in the Permian Basin is critical to the movement of people and goods that support the largest source of oil and gas production in this country, Abbott stated. I thank the U.S. Department of Transportation and Secretary Elaine Chao for recognizing the vital role that this region continues to play in our nation's energy independence. Working together with TxDOT, the federal government continues to show its commitment bettering the roads and bridges across Texas. The project is set to demolish the current overpass over I-20 and build a new one so the interstate goes over Cotton Flat Road, according to the governor's office. This will eliminate the possibility of bridge strikes that caused lengthy traffic delays and posed a serious safety risk. Between 2015 and 2018, there were 7 reported bridge strikes at this location. We are grateful to Secretary Elaine Chao, Senator John Cornyn, and Congressman Mike Conaway for their leadership in securing these funds for our great state, said Chairman J. Bruce Bug, Jr. in the press release. Interstate 20 is a vital energy trade corridor not only for Texas, but for the entire United States. This build grant is a huge boost in our efforts to increase safety along this corridor and to connect the Permian Basin energy sector to global markets. The continued increase in energy activity is creating significant damage to roads from water, sand, equipment, and big trucks, creating a safety issue for all drivers in those areas, according to the governor's office. As such, TxDOT announced a historic investment throughout the Permian Basin over the next 10 years through its Unified Transportation Program. The commission approved more than $600 million more funding for improvements in the UTP for the Permian Basin in 2019. Following my meeting in the Permian Basin with Chairman Bug and other transportation stakeholders last year, I'm proud to announce another federal investment in the region's infrastructure, said Cornyn, who sent a letter to the U.S. Department of Transportation in support of the project. This grant will streamline the interchange and allow for safer, more efficient travel in West Texas. Conaway added that I-20 is an essential corridor for both travel and trade in our community. Not only does it support our critical energy sector, but it also is a vital east-west corridor for the agriculture, mining, trucking, construction, and manufacturing industries. Energy production in the Permian Basin is projected to more than double over the next 4 years. There is an urgent need to maintain and improve existing rural infrastructure in the area, and this grant will help make sure production continues while also easing its impacts on local residents, the governor's office reported. Safety is our top priority, and we appreciate the assistance from our federal partners to address a booming area that not only benefits the citizens of Texas, but the nation as a whole, TxDOT Executive Director James Bass stated in the release. Evans added that the Midland community was instrumental in advocacy process, and the award would not have been possible without the efforts of Cornyn, Senator Ted Cruz, Conaway, Abbott, Bug, State Senator Kel Seliger, State Reps Tom Craddock and Brooks Landgraf, the Permian Basin MPO, Midland County, Mayor Patrick Payton, the Midland Development Corp., and the Midland Chamber of Commerce. State and local news. Summer Mummers creates Pandemic Plea for Pennies Telethon by J.C. Lewis. jacy.lewis@hurstnp.com. Despite the postponement of the Summer Mummers season due to the coronavirus, the show is going on, only this time it will be streamed. The melodrama will be streamed this Saturday on television station KWES, Channel 9, starting at 7 p.m. for a three-hour event. Summer Mummers Board Vice President Jesse Willman said the telethon will be used to help fund the Midland Community Theater. "This is the first time in its history where we've had to cancel the live performances," she said. "It's something we look forward to every single summer." Summer Mummers is a fundraiser for the Midland Community Theater, raising almost $500,000 a year for the operational budget of MCT. Willman said the volunteers came up with 35 different ideas to raise funds, but due to logistics, MCT officials figured out a telethon would be the best way to perform and raise money. The melodrama got a makeover to make it shorter and provided it a pandemic plotline. Volunteers then whittled down the cast, wore masks while rehearsing, maintained 6 feet of distance between cast members, and self-quarantined for 2 weeks before rehearsal started. "We've been taking a lot of extra precautions," she said, "a lot of costume cleanings that typically don't take place." Ben Spencer volunteered to write the new script, which is shorter and called Pandemic Plea for Pennies. "The plot is a spoof about saving the Yucca Theater from the evil corona," Willman said. "The telethon is live with some pre-recorded elements, including parts of the melodrama and some oleo skits. It's kind of a neat thing because we have never been able to pre-record things before. A lot of our telethon skits will be like Saturday Night Live shorts. We are going to have live elements, and we will be interviewing a lot of longtime volunteers, a bunch of volunteer people might recognize because they have been involved with Summer Mummers for 35 to 40 years. She said viewers can stop by the Yucca Theater before the show starts from 4 to 6 p.m., and volunteers will be giving out mugs and popcorn to people who make a donation. The telethon also will be an awareness event to inform viewers about the history and purpose of Summer Mummers. Volunteers also will serve as a live audience during the show while getting to enjoy the show they normally help put on. Normally, we have more than 100 volunteers per performance at Summer Mummers. A lot of mummers aren't getting the chance to volunteer this year because they're not all actors. We have asked that they attend the telethon, and they will serve as the live audience. The arts are a huge part of not only Midland's community, but the nation. It is important for Midlanders to continue to support the MCT. We want to keep bringing quality arts to Midland. We're the third largest community theater in the nation, and we are a jewel in the desert because we operate more like a repertory or regional theater than we do a community theater. The show can be viewed on KWES' website. Extra Summer Mummers snippets can be watched at www.facebook.com/summermummers. Oilfield worker turned Texas country artist to play free show tonight. From staff reports. After a 19-year career in the oil industry, Scott Haley turned in his hard hat to pursue his dream of playing country music. Tonight, Haley brings his Shut Up and Sing Tour acoustic series to the Rusty Bucket, BBQ, and Tavern. "I'm so excited about this show," Haley stated in a press release. "For nearly two decades, Midland was my second home. That's where I worked and made some lifelong friends. To get to bring my first tour back to this town is really special." Haley will be performing his debut single, Truth About Texas, along with other songs off his forthcoming album. Truth About Texas is described as undeniably genuine and sure to resonate with anyone who is sure to be from the Lone Star State. "As Texans, we are strong people who take care of our own. We know about Friday night lights, barroom brawls, and helping our neighbors after a flood. This song paints a true picture of what Texas is all about," said Haley, who grew up in Rising Star. In the two-man acoustic set, Haley and band member Kevin Miller will also be performing. The Permian, a song dedicated to the hardworking people of the Permian Basin. The show starts at 9 p.m., and there is no cover charge, according to the press release. Permian Basin Comic Con goes on with coronavirus safety policies and virtual streams, by J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstnp.com. The Permian Basin Comic Con starts Friday at the Bush Convention Center. This year, the Comic Con will look different with in-person and virtual parts of the convention. Celebrity guests, including John Swayze, Jason David Frank, Ricardo Fajardo, and Stephanie Noldani, will be at the Bush Convention Center signing autographs. The event's Facebook page states there will be different availability each day. Panels and events will be broadcast on Facebook Live and on the Comic Con website at pbcomicconx.com. The Comic Con is providing a streaming service to ensure people don't pack into rooms to view events and panels. The cosplay contest also will be live streamed. Those attending the Permian Basin Comic Con must wear a face covering. Temperature checks will be placed at the door. Local briefs from staff reports. Sub 100 COVID case week looks possible. The Midland Health Department reported 10 coronavirus cases Thursday, bringing the weekly total to 69. That number is less than the previous 2 weeks, according to the Health Department. 2 weeks ago, the number of cases through Thursday was 123. Last week, there were 97 new cases through Thursday. The total this week shows the first sub 100 case since June 7th through 13th is possible. Last Friday, there were 26 reported. Thursday's new cases are reflective of lab results, the Health Department reported. The Health Department also reported 1,223 active cases, 15 less than Wednesday, and 1,959 recovered, 30 more. On Thursday, the City of Midland reported the 75th COVID-related death of a Midland County resident. City. COVID death toll in Midland County hit 75. The city of Midland reported the second coronavirus-related death this week and the 75th over the course of the pandemic. The city announced on Thursday the death of a male in his 90s. He died on Wednesday. The city reported also stated that the man was being treated at Memorial Hospital and had underlying health conditions. MISD, four more cases reported this week. The number of coronavirus cases involving Midland ISD staff members since August 1st increased to 37, according to the school district. The district on its website reported a combined four more Tuesday and Wednesday. Campuses impacted are Abel Junior High, Travis Elementary, Midland High, and Goddard Junior High. The new cases reported means that all four junior high campuses have now reported coronavirus cases. No closing of campuses were required, according to the district. The number of reported cases inside Midland ISD jumped to 68 during the pandemic. Midland ISD has said that each notification triggers a series of steps, which includes sanitizing and disinfecting, notification of individuals in close proximity, and notification to the health department. Anytime we become aware of an individual with a confirmed case who was present at a public gathering, such as a board meeting or sporting event, we will also issue a press release.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, September 11, 2020. Day of Remembrance. The city of Odessa displayed 3,000 American flags, as seen on September 11, 2019, in memory of 9/11 at Memorial Garden Park. Today is Patriot Day. Patriot Day is an annual observance on September 11 to remember those who were injured or died during the terrorist attacks in the United States on September 11, 2001. Many Americans refer to Patriot Day as 9/11 or September 11. 9/11 Stair Climb. Crunch Fitness will honor those who lost their lives on 9/11 by challenging their staff and gym members to climb 110 flights of stairs in remembrance of the 110 floors of the World Trade Center Twin Towers. Members of the community are also welcome to join Crunch Fitness in this challenge. Participants will receive a free one-week membership. Hours at the Midland location, 3200 North Loop, 250 West, are 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. Patriot Day Salute. Prosperity Bank will partner with the City of Odessa in paying tribute to the community's first responders, as well as remembering the victims of the tragedies of September 11, 2001. Patriot Day is a day to remember those who were injured or died during the terrorist attacks on 9/11. Additionally, Texas First Responders Day is proclaimed to honor the heroes that protected our local community and state during times of emergencies. While there will not be an official ceremony this year, the flags will be waving proudly once again at Memorial Gardens Park, 42nd and JBS Parkway in Odessa, through Sunday. Representatives from the city and county gathered to place a wreath amongst the flags in memory of local fallen officers, and an American flag was posted to honor each of them. Everyone is encouraged to take a moment to stroll through the flags or just drive by to enjoy the inspiring sight. Source, City of Odessa. Honor those who served. There are many organizations in operation right here in the Permian Basin that are at the task of serving all kinds of needs for present or former members of our military. Some of them are Show of Support, 687-2167, Honor Our Troops, 889-0177, Real Thanks, 528-6633, Centers for Children and Families, 570-1084, Midland College Veterans Affairs Office, 685-4511, Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee, 366-3458, Soldiers of Today and Yesterday, 631-3429. Today in history. Today is Friday, September 11, the 255th day of 2020. There are 111 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On September 11, 2001, nearly 3,000 people were killed as 19 Al-Qaeda hijackers seized control of four jetliners, sending two of the planes into New York's World Trade Center, one into the Pentagon, and the fourth into a field in western Pennsylvania. On this date, in 1777, during the American Revolution, forces under General George Washington were defeated by the British in the Battle of Brandywine. In 1789, Alexander Hamilton was appointed the first U.S. Secretary of the Treasury. In 1814, an American fleet scored a decisive victory over the British in the Battle of Lake Champlain in the War of 1812. In 1885, author D.H. Lawrence was born in Eastwood, Nottinghamshire, England. In 1936, Boulder Dam, now Hoover Dam, began operation as President Franklin D. Roosevelt pressed a key in Washington to signal the startup of the dam's first hydroelectric generator. In 1941, groundbreaking took place for the Pentagon. In a speech that drew accusations of anti-Semitism, Charles A. Lindbergh told an America First rally in Des Moines, Iowa, that the British, the Jewish, and the Roosevelt administration were pushing the United States toward war. In 1972, the troubled Munich Summer Olympics ended. Northern California's Bay Area Rapid Transit System began operations. In 1973, Chilean President Salvador Allende died during a violent military coup. In 2006, in a primetime address, President George W. Bush invoked the memory of the victims of the 9/11 attacks as he staunchly defended the war in Iraq, though he acknowledged that Saddam Hussein was not responsible for the attacks. In 2007, a new Osama bin Laden videotape was released on the 6th anniversary of 9/11. In it, the Al-Qaeda leader's voice is heard commemorating one of the suicide hijackers and calling on young Muslims to follow his example by martyring themselves in attacks.
Editorial page. Our view. Impact of 9/11 lingers with our nation. It has been 19 years since the terrorist attacks that fundamentally changed America. The 9/11 attacks introduced a nation to Islamic terrorism in a way that none of us could ever have imagined. Flying airplanes into symbols of American exceptionalism was the wake-up call of those who wanted nothing more than to see the blood of Westerners spill onto the streets. The 9/11 attacks made Al-Qaeda and its leader Osama bin Laden household names. It also did something more remarkable, unifying America, even if it was for a short period. We know the rest, including the thousands that died in endless wars that the Defense Department tells us have ended, but feels like they continue to this day. The Defense Department reports 2,353 total deaths and 20,149 wounded in action in Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan, those taking place between 2001 and 2014. Those numbers can't measure up to the 4,431 total deaths and 31,994 wounded in action in Operation Iraqi Freedom, those taking place between 2003 and 2010. But while the clock ran out on certain operations, the American presence in the region continues. The New York Times this week reported 8,600 troops remain in Afghanistan. In Iraq, that number is 5,200, although President Trump said this week that he plans on cutting that commitment to 3,000. Military leaders also expect the number in Afghanistan to be cut in half. That is welcomed news. Here's hoping that Midlanders take some time today to remember the 2001 terrorist attacks, the lives lost on that day, and the commitment made by tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, to put themselves in harm's way for our safety. For those people, I know I will always be grateful. But sometime in the future, I hope Americans think about the other side of post-911, conflicts that defined our foreign policy for more than a decade. Our commitment was for a reason poorly explained and without other nations that had no problems allowing the United States to use its own resources. Despite what your favorite cable news station or radio personality tells you, that commitment was bipartisan and, if held unchecked, will continue as long as there is the possibility of intervention somewhere. If some want to read this and question the seriousness with which I view the danger abroad, that is your prerogative. But I also acknowledge that today makes me think about another post-9/11 attack that killed a Midlander, one of our boys, Jake Young. and there is not a military commitment imaginable that could have prevented that 2002 bombing in Bali. At some point, our leaders must be more laser-focused on what counts as America's interests and what is worth the long-term sacrifice of American men and women. Here's one more point. Our nation's debt was $5.8 trillion on September 30, 2011, according to a Department of the Treasury website. And while the wars and post-9/11 interventionism aren't the only reason for the explosion of that debt to $26.7 trillion, according to the USClock.org on Wednesday, we did provide a reason to break out of the credit card and gave politicos the opportunity to spend even larger sums of money for other programs. It helped desensitize a nation on deficit spending that was unlike what we had seen prior to 9/11. No one is talking about pulling out the entire commitment of military personnel out of Japan, 54,000 according to Reuters, Germany, 48,000 as reported by USA Today in July, or South Korea, 28,500 troops according to a July article in the Wall Street Journal. Re-examining the scale of that commitment at all sites across the globe, though, is necessary. Stuart Doreen, editor. Obituaries and death notices. Irene Valenzuela Lopez, 85 of Midland, passed away on September 6th with her husband and family by her side. She was born on April 5th, 1935 in Fort Stockton. Viewing times will be Thursday from 12 noon to 9 p.m., and Friday, 9 to 9, at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A rosary will be held on Friday, September 11th at 7 p.m. in the Luella Garcia Pipkin Chapel. A funeral mass will be celebrated on Saturday, September 12th at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Graveside service to follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Please wear masks as required. Peggy Lou Winterland, 70 of Midland, died on September 7th while surrounded by her family. The family will receive friends from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, September 11th in the First Baptist Church Welcome Center. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Saturday in the First Baptist Church Worship Center. The services will also be live streamed. Shirley Price Anderson, 71 of Anna, Texas, passed away on September 8th. A visitation will be held Sunday, September 13th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland. A graveside will be held Monday, September 14th, at 10 a.m. at Greenwood Baptist Cemetery in Greenwood, Texas. Retha Lee Maxey, 68 of Midland, passed away peacefully on Saturday, September 6th. The family will receive friends on Saturday, September 12th, in the chapel at American Heritage Funeral Home. A second memorial service will be held in Broken Bow, Oklahoma on October 17th. Anna Marie Lunsford, 59 of Midland, passed away Thursday, September 7th. Viewing will be Friday, September 11th from 9 to 9 p.m., with rosary to be recited that evening at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Funeral Mass will be celebrated on Saturday, September 12th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. She is survived by her husband, Michael, two brothers and one sister. Renee Romero passed away August 28. A memorial mass will be held Friday, September 11th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church at 11:15 a.m.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, September 11th, 2020. Permian Basin Roadwork nabs federal dollars. Governor Greg Abbott and the Texas Department of Transportation announced Thursday that TxDOT has won a federal grant to help transform an intersection on I-20, which is set to ease congestion and make roads safer. Through the Better Utilizing Investments to Leverage Development Transportation grants, the U.S. Department of Transportation awarded TxDOT $25 million for the I-20 and Cotton Flat Road interchange near Midland. Improving the infrastructure in the Permian Basin is critical to the movement of people and goods that support the largest source of oil and gas production in this country, Abbott stated in the press release. I thank the U.S. Department of Transportation and Secretary Elaine Chao for recognizing the vital role that this region continues to play in our nation's energy independence. Working together with TxDOT, the federal government continues to show its commitment bettering the roads and bridges across Texas. There were plenty of thanks to go around. We are grateful to U.S. Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao, Senator John Cornyn, and Congressman Mike Conaway for their leadership in securing these funds for our great state, Chairman J. Bruce Bug Jr. also stated in the press release. Interstate 20 is a vital energy trade corridor not only for Texas, but for the entire United States. This build grant is a huge boost in our efforts to increase safety along this corridor and to connect the Permian Basin energy sector to global markets. Energy production in the Permian Basin is reportedly projected to more than double over the next 4 years. The project is set to demolish the current overpass over I-20 and build a new one so the interstate goes over Cotton Flat Road. This will eliminate the possibility of bridge strikes that caused lengthy traffic delays and posed a serious safety risk. Between 2015 and 2018, there were 7 reported bridge strikes at this location, the press release stated. The continued increase in energy activity is creating significant damage to roads from water, sand, equipment, and big trucks, creating a safety issue for all drivers in those areas. I-20 is an essential corridor for both travel and trade in our community. Not only does it support our critical energy sector, but it is also a vital east-west corridor for the agriculture, mining, trucking, construction, and manufacturing industries. This grant will go towards raising the Cotton Flat Road overpass, which has suffered from numerous bridge strikes and has been a safety hazard with frequent traffic shutdowns. I am pleased to see the Trump administration continue to invest in our local infrastructure and look forward to the finished overpass, Congressman Mike Conaway stated in the press release. TxDOT announced a historic investment throughout the Permian Basin over the next 10 years through its Unified Transportation Program. The commission approved more than $600 million more funding for improvements in the UTP for the Permian Basin in 2019. Safety is our top priority, and we appreciate the assistance from our federal partners to address a booming area that not only benefits the citizens of Texas, but the nation as a whole, said TxDOT Executive Director James Bass. The Permian Strategic Partnership is thrilled USDOT is organizing the importance of the Permian Basin, is recognizing the importance of the Permian Basin to our state, nation, and world by awarding build grant funds to this TxDOT project, said Don L. Evans, chairman for the Permian Strategic Partnership. The Permian is one of the most strategically important oil-producing regions in the world, and it is critical we continue to invest in the region's priority infrastructure projects to fully realize its potential. Paying tribute. Prosperity Bank is partnering with the City of Odessa in paying tribute to first responders, as well as remembering the victims of the tragedies of September 11th, 2001. Patriot Day is a day to remember those who were injured or died during the terrorist attacks on 9/11. Additionally, Texas First Responders Day is proclaimed to honor the heroes who protected our local community and state during times of emergencies. Flags will once again be up at Memorial Gardens Park, 42nd and JBS Parkway, through September 20th. The American Tribute is something that we look forward to every year, and we are proud to partner with the City of Odessa. We hope all citizens will come out and take a moment to honor our fallen officers, as well as celebrate our first responders who gave and continue to give the ultimate sacrifice, says Mike Marshall, West Texas Area President. Odessa City Council. Davis Wants a Shot at District 1, by Michael Merlot. Despite having a tough upbringing in Odessa, Tiki Frank Davis, 42, looks to the District 1 seat because he said he understands the people and wants to bring opportunity to those in need. "I think now is the time," he said. "I believe that I'm the voice of the people, and sometimes God places you in situations and opportunities." Davis said it felt like a responsibility to give back to the district, which he said he's done in other ways as owners of Sam's Barbecue in Odessa and Midland, his own construction company, and his investing in real estate. He said he employs about 40 people in his various businesses, including contract labor. He said that it felt like a sign was sent him when he bought the home of the first Black Odessa City Councilman Willie Hammond Jr., and his neighbors asked him to run. "I think that I bring a different voice," he said. "I think coming where I came from, I understand the language. So what do I mean by that is I understand the language of corporate, and I understand the language of the community. And I believe everybody wants the same thing in District 1, but they just don't know how to get it." Davis grew up there, and he said that he's lived in the district most of his life. And as a child, he said his existence was plagued by poverty, and many of those around him turned to crime. Davis earned his bachelor's degree in communication and his master's degree in liberal arts from Sul Ross State University. Davis has been recognized locally and nationally for his resiliency and his entrepreneurial work as a Black man who came from the bottom and worked through his younger years that weren't always described as promising. Davis spoke about moving on from that time in his life and said that it has made him stronger to have had to struggle through it. He detailed that he's earned college degrees, made money as a quality control engineer for the late Clayton Williams, and bought businesses. He said he has created a brand himself, the Tiki Factor, which is his presence as a public speaker, an entrepreneur, and actor. "Like I like to say, I've played on the football fields of West Texas. I've also worked in the oil fields of West Texas. I've also been in boardrooms and courtrooms, so I understand both sides. I've been poor and I've been well off, so I understand the heartbeat of the community." Davis said previous District 1 council members had great intentions, but sometimes experience is the number one key. "I know I have the experience to do the job and what the community is asking. I'm already doing it. So in a sense, I felt like I've already been the representative of the district because the things that they're asking, I am currently doing." Davis said that he's building affordable housing in the community and is working on behalf of building a reentry facility for ex-offenders getting out of prison. "I've given to the homeless, let people live at my office building, pull up trailers, give them jobs. Every person I hire is a second chance person." Davis spoke about how he wants the people of the district to keep themselves accountable. He takes notes for his district on his phone, ranging from ensuring basic needs for children are met to keeping the area clean. He also spoke about maximizing the talents of the local professionals and seeking aid to invest in the district, which could include a museum celebrating those who have been successful from the district, he said. He also noted that he hopes to promote religious unity, racial unity, and to encourage responsible sexuality and parenting. Davis said he has worked hard to overcome a blemish from his past. Court records show a 17-year-old Davis pled guilty to aggravated sexual assault of a child on June 20th, 1996. He said he entered the plea based on legal advice that he now wishes he had not taken. He spent 6 months in the Ector County Law Enforcement Center during his senior year of high school and then was placed on the sex offender registry and deferred adjudication for 10 years. A legal notice dated May 23, 2001, details that the offense was aggravated sexual assault child, an 11-year-old female. Davis said during a recent interview that 23 years later, this girl comes forward and says, "I'm sorry, Davis didn't do this. So we went to court and they overturned it. So I'm completely clean from that," adding that she wrote a letter that led him to being allowed off the sex offender registry in 2018. Justin Lowe, the attorney who represented Davis in the registry removal case, said that the case has not been overturned, but confirmed Davis is off the registry and seeking an expungement, which is the process of having a criminal conviction destroyed or sealed from a state or federal record. Lowe also said the girl has not recanted on the record in court since he has represented Davis. He added that the girl has tentatively confirmed that, but has not come forward to undo that, so technically the conviction still stands. There are a lot of questions about the improper conviction, but I was not his attorney back then. During the interview, Davis indicated he worried about how the article would be written and said if it showed him in a negative light, that it should not be written at all. It was one of those deals that you watch on TV that a black person was railroaded. That's exactly why it goes away, because I was railroaded and I didn't make a big stink about it, which is why Davis said he wanted the article to stay away from his past and added that if these articles that y'all do, you see what I'm saying, it's going to be one of those rallies, Black Lives Matter. That's the last thing y'all want right now. So that's what I'm trying to tell you. Let's not go there. Note, the Odessa American publishes profiles on all opposed candidates running for local elected positions. As part of the profiles, the OA looks into the backgrounds of candidates. Election information. Runoffs. City council and mayor candidates need 50% plus one of the vote to win their election, and City Secretary Norma Grimaldo said that a runoff date has not been scheduled. Who is running? Mayor Dewey Bryant, Javier Joven, and Gloria Apolinario. District 1, Eddie Mitchell, Michael Shelton, Mark Mata, and Tiki Davis. District 2, Stephen Thompson and Rachel Miner. At large, Denise Swanner, David Turner, Joanne Davenport, Littleton, and Latasha Gentry. Early voting is October 13th to October 30th. Visit http://www.co.ector.tx.us/page/ector.elections for more information. Election day is November 3rd. COVID-19 news by the number. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 4,433. Ector County negative, 19,974 out of 24,730 tested, with 323 pending, 78 deaths. Recovered, 3,716. Active, 639. Midland County, 3,421 confirmed, 75 deaths. Texas, 649,809 confirmed, with 5,405,257 tested. Total Texas deaths, 13,853. U.S. cases, 6,343,562 total confirmed, and 190,262 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Free COVID-19 testing. The City of Odessa, in partnership with the University of Texas Permian Basin, has scheduled the second round of free mobile COVID-19 testing events at the following times, dates, and locations. September 16th, 9 to 11 a.m., McKinney Park, Christmas Line, 625 West Poole Road. September 23rd, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., UTPB Park, Soccer Field Parking, East Loop 338 and Highway 191. September 30th, 9 to 11 a.m., Sherwood Park, East 49th Street and Cordova Parking Lot. October 14th, 9 to 11 a.m., Floyd Gwynn Park, Parking Lot, 1015 North County Road West. Events are for City of Odessa and Ector County residents, first come, first serve. Only 200 tests will be administered at each event. Participants must remain in their vehicles with the window up until a testing team member approaches you. Bring ID. No appointments or pre-registration required. Children as young as 3 years old are eligible for testing. For more information, call 557-6557 or visit www.odessa-tx.gov/COVID testing. Ector County ISD reported 2 new COVID-19 cases Thursday, both employees from Permian High School. Quick hits. WTFB in need of help. The West Texas Food Bank has set up a few opportunities for the community to get involved since this year is different due to COVID-19. WTFB is now accepting small volunteer groups and individuals through its new volunteer website, wtxfoodbank.volunteerhub.com, to help them keep organized. Local communities are also encouraged to start a virtual food drive or to just donate at wtxfoodbank.org/host-a-food-drive. In addition, partner agencies are encouraged to add their link at wtxfoodbank.org/how-to-get-help for people who are in need of help. For additional information, call 580-6333 or visit wtxfoodbank.org. Wagner Knoll returns to live performances by Ruth Campbell. Starting with the Everly Set, a celebration of the Everly Brothers, the Wagner Knoll will make its return to offering live entertainment September 15th. Also on the schedule this month is Cuentos, Tales from the Latino World, September 19th, and Herman's Hermits, starring Peter Noon, September 20th. The WNPAC website said. As with many other activities, schools, theaters, and venues, the Wagner Knoll stopped staging live performances in mid-March due to COVID-19. We had no way of knowing at that time just how long all of this would last, and after several months passed, the question became, when can we come back? So that's been the question for the last few months. Today, we are happy to say that that time has come, WNPAC General Manager Stephanie Rivas said during a news conference held in the lobby of the facility. Audience members applauded at the news. We do have three performances scheduled for this month, and then, of course, we will continue to have events each month following, Rivas said. She noted that things will look different than they did before. We, as ASM Global, the managers of this facility for the University of Texas Permian Basin, are taking all of the steps necessary to ensure that our patrons all feel good about their choice to come back into these doors for live entertainment, Rivas said. Venue Shield is a comprehensive program by which all ASM Global stadiums, arenas, and theaters will uphold the areas of safety, sanitation, and cleanliness. Patrons will see hand sanitizing stations throughout the venue. All of our seating is currently social distanced. Face coverings will be required for all patrons as they enter the facility and will be worn anytime they're in line for concessions, restrooms, and when they're moving through the lobby. With the help of Alpha Defense Shield, today this entire venue and the academic spaces here at the Wagner Knoll are being sanitized using Zuno antibacterial products that apply a 90-day germ-fighting shield on all of our hard and soft surfaces. Our Wagner Knoll staff will then continue to maintain that process throughout the year with specialized equipment. Rivas thanked the facility's donors, board members, and university leadership for their support of the Wagner Knoll and the staff during these uncertain times. It's because of them that this venue continues to be a shining star in our West Texas landscape. We will continue to be creative and to bring you quality entertainment, and we hope that our patrons will continue to purchase tickets and let us entertain them, she said. UTPB President Sandra Woodley also thanked the Wagner Knoll staff. It's been a stressful time, I think, for all of us trying to figure out how we get back to the business of running a university, and part of the university is this beautiful Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. It's hard to believe that it is almost 10 years old. It's about to have a decade worth of experience in providing entertainment and cultural experiences here in the Permian Basin. We are really pleased that it is about to come and get off the sidelines and ever so cautiously edge back on to provide that in the Permian Basin with entertainment, Woodley said. We know that this is a gift to the community. Our music students study out here, so we're really happy to have it coming back on. We deeply appreciate the thoughtfulness and the care that has gone into the planning for making sure that our community is safe when they come in and enjoy the events that we'll be able to see here coming up, Woodley added. People may purchase tickets as a household in groups of 2, 4, 6, or 8. If they need more, Rivas said they can call the box office. The Wagner Knoll has an 1,800-seat capacity, but it can only seat 730 during this time, Rivas said. Once people have purchased their seats in a certain location, there will be no one sitting on either side of you, and then we have skipped every other row in the larger sections, so you are socially distanced around you. We are hopeful that artists will want to come out and perform, Rivas added. I think that's the biggest challenge for us, is that many artists have had to cancel full tours because every state has its own guidelines and its own designations, so it's very hard for them to put a tour together. So what we're looking at is artists who are willing to come in and do what we call fly-in dates. They may just do one date here, and they would fly to another location, Rivas said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.